You're the big, big boss. You tell me what to do, and I gladly do my job. But I don't like your attitude.
The first step that was really the most important step for me was admitting to myself and admitting to my team that I both want and need leadership training, right? And so the first thing you had me do was sort of do a, have an all-hands meeting with the core team that was going to go through this with me and tell them, you know, what was going to happen and why we were doing this. And, you know, before admitting to them that I need leadership training, I had to admit to myself, right? And that step was sort of profound to sort of put it out there. And now I talk about it all the time. I tell my customers that I have a leadership coach, right? I remind my team that I have a leadership coach. And just that step of admitting to yourself what you're going to do and then telling everybody else and being vulnerable that it's okay to like not be some God's gift leader naturally, right? That I wasn't born as, you know, Napoleon, and that I'm practicing and training and trying to improve, actually may be one of the most profound steps of the whole process.
Now tell me, who do you think you are? Besides a person who happens to be in charge.
This is Paul Maslany with Zach Ruiz and Errol Dobler from the Leadership in Tech podcast. This is our 32nd episode. We hope you like this podcast as much as the last few episodes. I know that we've had a great time making this season. We are excited to be airing this, our 6th episode of our 2nd season. Stick around after the show for updates, guest info, announcements, and more. The Technology On-Ramp presents the Leadership in Tech podcast, episode number 32, Even Tiger Woods Has a Coach.
Maybe you got lucky, maybe you worked real hard, and just maybe that doesn't make you smart.
Hello, hello.
The nice thing about Skype is the recording does sound decently nice.
It sounds pretty good.
I just listened to like 30 seconds of the last one, and it's not bad. I mean, the skipping notwithstanding.
Okay, good. Sounds good. So what are we talking about?
So we're doing an update on my personal journey. Is that what we're calling it?
I think that is what we're calling it.
It's sort of like, the way I think about it, the theme for the season, right, is exploring leadership in tech with the tech giants, right? People who work at the tech giants and people who have already found this topic to be fascinating and are writing books about it or working, at the intersection of leadership in tech. But at the same time, right, I'm going through a sort of leadership coaching, and I'm working on technology projects. So if we look at that angle, you get a little glimpse into some of the sort of growth that happens when you actually focus on this, every day.
Yeah, it's what we it's exactly what we've been talking about, and it's a first line look into some of the things that, again, you're one of those super coders, super smart guys, and admittedly, when you started getting handed many years ago some leadership assignments, just weren't ready. Expectations weren't set. Guidelines weren't set for what you expected. You kind of expected everybody else just to be just like you. And it was a real eye-opener when it didn't work out that way.
I think that was the Mark Billows episode where we realized that you're swimming in an ocean and you just expect everyone to be swimming right next to you. And I'll tell you, for one, having swam with you before, I can't even keep up with you even close, right? Like, it's like physically impossible.
Yeah, and it's funny because we're definitely talking about two different things. Because I didn't think we were actually talking about the actual art of swimming. But I guess if we are, we can move topic. No, which one are we staying with? We're staying with the metaphorical or the actual?
I like to mix them.
So, just as a reminder, what we did was last season, you know, as we talked about, you know, you were gracious and humble enough to talk about some of your challenges when you started in leadership, and which really is what brought us to this whole podcast and our, you know, and our adventure. So we said we would put you through kind of a one-on-one executive coaching, and it's a process that I implemented studying under a guy named Marshall Goldsmith, and it's a tried and true, and really it's a very transparent process where we pick one or two behaviors for you to focus on. We include stakeholders, in this case, some of your employees who weigh in on what they think maybe you could improve at. And then we pick, you tell your stakeholders what those behaviors are. And then once a month, you follow up with them saying, you remember, here's what I said I was going to do. Did I do it? And they're the ones who get to decide whether or not you're getting better. So that's the process. That's what we're going through. And so why don't you kind of walk me through how you're feeling about it so far? We are about 3 months in, 3 months in to the process.
Yeah, I mean, so as like every other facet of my life, I am the worst with following process, just the absolute worst. I hate process, as you know. We've talked about this many times, right? Process borderline offends me. And so I'm the worst at following the process. However, it's still working. Does that make sense?
Right. And, you know, when we talked about this stuff offline, or maybe even we said it on air, we might have said it in the intro episode, that you were shocked that it just wasn't what you thought it was going to be. You thought it was going to be this huge algorithm of steps to take and, you know, just very complex and taking a lot of your time. But in reality, it was just a couple of very simple minor adjustments. And that constituted the quote unquote process.
Yeah. I mean, small things have big outcomes. Okay, so we'll talk about the process, but I think the first step that was really the most important step for me was admitting to myself and admitting to my team that I both want and need leadership training, right? And so the first thing you had me do was sort of do have an all-hands meeting with the core team that was going to go through this with me and tell them, you know, what was going to happen and why we were doing this. And, you know, before admitting to them that I need leadership training, I had to admit to myself, right? And that step was sort of profound to sort of put it out there. And now I talk about it all the time. I tell my customers that I have a leadership coach, right? I remind my team that I have a leadership coach. And just that step of admitting to yourself what you're going to do and then telling everybody else and being vulnerable that it's okay to like not be some God's gift leader naturally, right? That I wasn't born as, you know, Napoleon, and that I'm practicing and training and trying to improve, actually may be one of the most profound steps of the whole process.
Well, and it's the most important step, you know, and if you think about it, everybody gets coaching somewhere along the way. Even, you know, new employees go to new employee training. That's a form of coaching. You know, the obvious cliches of, you know, even Tiger Woods has a coach, even, you know, every athlete has a coach in some way, shape or form, whether it's somebody to help them with their psyche, their physical well-being or the steps of their game. And, you know, this whole thing that, you know, you weren't, you know, born this great leader. Well, everything that I provide to you and my clients was built over 25 years, over 30 years of practical experience in leadership and in leadership roles. So, you know, it's taken me this long to say, hey, I think I can finally start imparting some of this stuff on somebody, you know, some other folks. So You had it. You had the steps correct. While it was hard, you were very willing to say, this is something that I could probably use. What do I lose by giving it a try?
Yeah, but you don't think about it in the beginning, because you think like it. So I think, you know, so I get hired by a new customer. I'm supposed to be the one that's going to solve all their problems. To admit that I have coaches and need leadership is a mental hurdle that you have to get over. And getting over that hurdle, on the other side of it, you find out like, wow, that was easy. That's okay. Like, that works.
And what's been your impression of the response that people are having when you tell them that?
They think it's super cool. Then I also tell them that it's an ex-Navy SEAL, and then they think it's really cool. So I also like that aspect as well. Like, it's true, right? It gives you confidence to know that you have a coach that has your back, that you can call up and bounce ideas off of, that has had different experiences than you, right? That has a cool sounding past, like ex-Navy SEAL. It's a process to embrace in a way, or it's a situation to embrace.
It is. When I, you know, before I even started in this business, I heard people had leadership coaches. I didn't know what to think. I was like, wow, that sounds really interesting, you know, but there was never what a loser. Now it's, you know, now it's commonplace. Now the best leaders in industry, if you don't have a coach, you know, what are you thinking? You don't have an objective person to bounce your leadership ideas and philosophies off of. You're really missing the boat. So what, you want to talk a little bit about what the things that we were going to work on?
Right. So we'll keep moving. So the next step, though, so past admitting, the next thing that had a sort of profound impact on me, sort of within the process, is this idea that every day is practice. So like, I'm no longer defining myself by my performance at work. I'm no longer feeling like I have to be this innate leader and everything I do is sort of a reflection of me. I now look at my interactions as practice, right? Where I go into an interaction knowing kind of what I want to accomplish. I have the interaction and do the best that I can. And I come out of the interaction saying, man, you know what? Next time I talk to Ryan, I wish I would say this. Or next time I do that exercise with Julie, I'm going to remember to do that. And so that sort of understanding that you're in a process and then you're not supposed to do it perfectly all the time, and that like your actions don't define who you are, is very sort of stress relieving on the daily.
Well, and what's so funny is, you know, what you just described, right, was now you have a hyper awareness of everything you're about to do. Okay. And you have a hyper awareness of your preparation going into it. And this was one of the things that you would literally not just disagree with me on, you would laugh in my face when I gave you this concept of everything you do, you need to have a plan. You need to be aware of everything you're doing. And you would, you know, what plans are for people who plan to fail or whatever.
Expect to fail.
Right, whatever that nonsense you would throw out. And now here you are, just as a matter of course, and I would try to convince you it's not what you're making it out to be. And now here you are, every time I go into an interaction, let's give it some thought about what I want to accomplish, who exactly am I speaking to, you know, what are the best ways to speak to those people, and then get in there and just be myself with that preparation. I'm not trying to be somebody else. And then let me take a look at it and go, next time, where can I go better? It's not that hard of a process.
So let me give you an example. So one of the central parts of the process, which again, I suck at processes, but one of the central parts is the daily question, right? And so I have six daily questions that you've sort of whittled me down to. And one of them is, did you do your best to fully engage your team in your conversations with them? And so, you know, when I talk to someone on my team, do they have all of my attention? And that's something I think about every day and try really, really hard to do. And so I realized that in the past, you know, I would take any phone call, right? I would take any Slack conversation, even if I was in the middle of something, and I would be half present quite often on the phone. And I didn't realize the effects of that as much as the person on the other side of the conversation did. And through sort of realizing that every time I have a conversation, I want to be fully engaged or else I don't want to have that conversation, right? That's an example of what we're talking about. Every day is practice. And the effects are like profound, right? Like I probably have less total number of conversations, but every one has a bigger income outcome because I'm fully present. And it sort of changes everything on the team, even though it's sort of the tiniest thing that I never even would have thought about before. And so sort of to your point, I still think plans are for people who expect to fail. But in my mind, this is almost different than the plans that I was always thinking about. This is more of a hyper awareness about something right. That's important to me, being fully engaged with the person I'm talking to. And by me thinking about it beforehand, doing it, thinking about it afterhand, and assessing myself in this very tiny little like loop, I guess it's a plan, right? It's not a plan how I think of plans, but it works.
Yeah, and that's so there's a lot of things in there that you just said. The first thing is, you know, those daily questions. Those daily questions are things that we discuss, but ultimately you decide what's important, right? So this is not me dictating to you. Right? How long did we have discussions before we came up with, okay, obviously now these are the things that are important to you that aren't going well. Let's put them to a daily question. So every day it's on the front of your mind. Did you do your best to get better at that?
Yeah, we had to figure them out.
We had to figure them out. It's not just, you know, it wasn't just me going, okay, here's what you're going to do, Zach. It was just us discussing, right? Because if you knew what to do, you probably would have done it. Half the problem is with people who want to get better at some things, they can't, they're having trouble figuring out what it is, which is completely normal. You know, that's not a slight on anybody. That's why you need just somebody, an objective ear to help you. The next thing about being present in the conversation, and now you actually have less conversations being more engaged, right? Because I think we've talked about, you know, the idea of there's no such thing as multitasking. You literally can't do two things at once. You can do two things really bad, right? I could be typing an email and trying to talk to you. I'm probably not putting enough thought into that email. Me and you aren't really engaging in a full conversation, and I'm going to have to come back around on both those things later now because I kind of put a half-hearted effort into both of them, which I was, you know, deemed the multitasking, right? No, I just was doing two things pretty poorly. Whereas you're saying, I jump on that conversation, I focus everything I have into it, I get every nuance that I may have missed before, every emotion maybe from that employee where I can say, hey, you know what, is everything okay? Before we start talking about their plan, which might be a skewed plan because they've got something on their mind, but you're catching that now. And now it's one conversation. It's a time saver. So, you know, that's pretty powerful stuff. What else?
I just can't, like, sort of the biggest shock for me is, you know, this is a perfect example, is I thought that the changes we were going to make were huge, and being fully present on every conversation is small, right? It's small, but the effects are huge. And having done that for a couple months, I mean, I hear, like, I have conversations with people and they now say, Zach, thank you so much. That made my day, right? Talking to you one time this month, but it was like super good. And now I know exactly what to do and go do it. Like, you can sort of see the outcomes of giving attention, and it makes people happy. And it the conversation reverberates. So even 3 weeks later, the stuff we talked about is still happening because we rooted it so deeply in a real solid call.
That's right. And anybody who's had a conversation with somebody who they knew wasn't listening or wasn't paying attention, this resonates with, because it is the worst. You're like, what am I even wasting my time doing? But I guess I'm obligated to have this conversation. And let me ask you this. Do you feel like you had to change your personality to do this, or did it operate within your personality?
No, it didn't change a thing. I simply was hyper aware of like, hey, I can't talk to this person at noon because I'm not going to be focused, right? And schedule it for tomorrow at 3. It's just more of a hyper awareness of the calls that you're before and after, and less about during the call. You're just being yourself, right? And you're just like doing what you do. But it's the hyper awareness that I would have never thought about before and after. So let's do another one. Did you do your best to distinguish between what is that which is within your control and that which isn't? This one is like huge for me. Anyone who talked to me when I left my last job, I would always describe death by 1,000 paper cuts, right? 1,000 tiny little things were all a paper cut until I felt so cut up that I couldn't take it anymore. I have no paper cuts now. I have 0 because I wouldn't allow myself to get a paper cut, right? If something makes you upset or triggers an emotion, that's human, right? That happens. But then you have the hyper awareness to say, wait a second, is this within my control or is this not within my control? If it's not within my control, that's not a paper cut, right? That's gone. Poof, gone. And so you still sort of feel all of the emotions and the, you feel the same way as you always did, but you have the hyper awareness to get it back under control a minute later instead of a month later, right? And allow yourself to have a paper cut or not, as opposed to just standing there, letting things happen to you.
You know, and these emotions are important. It's important to discuss that because we don't try to take emotion out of the reaction, the leadership reaction, but we want to embrace the emotions that we're feeling, because that means emotions are great things, right? That means there's something that, you know, the universe is trying to tell me right now. There's something that I am being impacted on. And, you know, I think it was Tony Robbins. I heard him talk about when this happens, check either your perspective or your process. And that's exactly what you're doing, right? You have an emotion. What's your perspective on that? Can I change this situation? Do I have control over it? And to realize, no, I don't. You've changed your perspective. You're saying, look, there's nothing I can do about this. Okay, so I have to just either let it go, move on, or do whatever I do, but I certainly can't let it weigh me down. Or, you know, I have good perspective, so I need to change my process. So this emotion is getting to me, and that's what you've done also. You've changed your process. You've become more focused on being in the moment with those conversations. That was missing in your process. Because that was missing, things would go wrong, and then things would happen, and then you'd be hit with these emotions of stress or whatever paper cut, you know, the emotion that particular paper cut hit you, right? So you had everything skewed and backwards, and now just a simple switch, and you've got it right on track. So how about one of the things that I want to talk about that you were like, we talked about holding people accountable. And I remember your impression on that was, this means yelling at people, this means micromanaging, this means all these awful dictatorial things. And your impression of holding people accountable now is what?
It's subtle sort of changes to the conversations that we have, you know, before, during, and after projects. I'm trying to follow a little script every time I talk about a project with anyone on my team. And so that starts with talking about outcomes and expectations for the task or the project, like defining, like very clearly getting on the same page with what the expectation should be for that task. And then the step I always missed before was discussing whether the person has the capabilities to do the project. That's sort of assuming assuming everyone's swimming with you, right? Just handing out projects that you know you could do and assuming that they can do them.
Right.
And that was an assumption I made all the time and now I never make. So anytime we talk about a project, what are the expectations, and then what capabilities are required to do that work, and does that person have those capabilities? And hearing them say yes, right, is important for both them and me. or hearing them say, no, man, I need a little help with this. And then you can find another person and you realize maybe it's a two-person job, or maybe I'm going to have to help a little with the project. And so it's going to be something I'm going to do. But sort of aligning capabilities and expectations before any work starts, right?
Yep.
And then agreeing on a feedback loop. So how often are we going to talk about this project? And it totally varies from project to project. I have people that I don't like, we are on the same page and they do not like to be micromanaged, and we've built up trust and I know that we can talk in a week. It's a 2-week project and we're going to talk once at a week and then it's going to be done. My lead developer, Ryan, I know that we will talk when he reaches out to me for certain projects because he loves the freedom of designing some of these subsystems, and he has demonstrated a history of reaching out when he has a question. And so I don't force him on a daily like status call, right? Mm-hmm. I have other people who like the daily status calls. They get nervous if they don't hear from me in maybe a day, and maybe they're prone to getting off track, and so they need that daily check-in. So treating everybody different, but before the project starts, mm-hmm. agree on a feedback loop, and then it's my responsibility to be there, again, sort of be there, fully engaged for the feedback. Again, I have a history of leaving people hanging, right? Like giving people enough rope to hang themselves and leaving them out on their own until they're sort of sideways, and then swooping in at the end and having sort of unknown issues to deal with. And so now it's on me to enforce the feedback loop and be there for them to, you know, however much they need so that they can do what they're supposed to do.
And so somebody who's listening to this might be saying, some people are getting it and some people might be saying, well, I don't understand where you're holding them accountable. Well, I'm not using the word process. That's just my word. But in this process that you just described, that's where people are held accountable right from the beginning. They're held accountable with knowing what's expected of them, knowing when there's going to be communication, your feedback loop. Whatever that communication is, they know what's going to exist. Okay? And the fact that they've told you that they have the capability, there is a certain amount of accountability to that. So just the idea that all of these measures were set out up front, and then where the communication part is going to happen is a form of accountability in and of itself.
It's the opposite of what you expect, though. It's the opposite of what you expect, because, again, I expected you were going to teach me how to, like, stare at somebody until they were scared and they knew not to do that again, right? Like, I thought there was some sort of Navy SEAL trick to get mad at someone without killing them, just hurt them enough so that they won't do it again. But it has nothing to do with the end. Like, it has nothing to do with the end of the project. It has everything to do with the beginning. And it's on
with
me.
The beginning. That-
like, I'm still, like, when we first started this, I would still miss this sort of script half the time, right? And even now, I don't do it perfectly. But I try to have the hyper-awareness to go through this script on every task and project until it becomes a habit and a culture for the team. And it's where they almost want to talk about this script, right? Because it makes it nice for everybody.
It does. And, you know, and that's the other thing that you just brought up is it doesn't just stick forever. No matter how great anybody is at this process, right? The accountability process of front loading the accountability, as opposed to how do I hold somebody accountable after the whole thing is broken down? You know, there's a lot of people to hold accountable once something ultimately breaks down, leader first and foremost, but that's a whole nother story. Oh boy, I missed my point. I was going to sidetrack and I came back. What was I just talking about?
You were talking
so
about
right now.
Oh no, I got it.
I'm back. So it never, you can get it, but everybody slips.
Oh,
right?
I slip all the time.
Just recently, I had to call you and be like, hey, it's that, you know, this month, this is when you've got to reach out to everybody. And it's kind of that's right. I got to be reminded to let people know we're still working on these things. That's the point. That's the point of having that somebody, that objective, you know, person on your, you know, kind of your conscious on your shoulder going, hey, don't forget, this is what got you to a good place.
Well, let's face facts, though. Let's face facts. I'm probably getting like a D in terms of the macro process. So I feel like I'm doing a good job in cultivating a hyper awareness in myself on a sort of hourly or, you know, daily basis, right? But I'm probably getting a D on the macro process of like sending out emails timely, scoring myself on the daily question so that we can do an average, right? There's still some elements of the process, the overarching process, where I struggle.
Right. And this is, you know, again, you keep setting me up, but this time because we're speaking the same language, that's okay. Because what do? We focus on one or two things. The second thing you focused on was setting guidelines, which you put into how you're going to hold people accountable. Your guidelines overall are these. You sent those out, but your guidelines for this specific task are these. And then we use those guidelines to hold people accountable. Just working on those two things has sent you to a new level of leadership. All the other stuff, sure, maybe we'll work on those later. But let's not overwhelm ourselves. Let's give ourselves a fighting chance here. Let's just pick a couple things, because I promise you get something important like accountability or guidelines right, or being in the moment, being present on a call, you get that right, the ripple effects of that improvement, you won't even be able to measure them, because they'll be so profound.
Yeah, I feel that. I feel that. I feel the ripple effects motivate sort of me to keep cultivating the hyper-awareness. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, just one little thing here and there, and then just get that down. Get that down. This is not an overhaul of personalities, right? You're still the same person. We didn't have to learn how to yell at somebody. Thank God, right? Because that's not, if you just do it the right way, you don't have to yell at anybody, okay? Because, and then if somebody's not on board, right? If somebody's just not following your guidelines, or they're not allowing themselves to be held accountable, what happens at the end is a very unemotional response by, for example, you, Zach, the leader, to say, look, here's what we agreed on. Here's what you agreed on. Here's where we tried to follow that process, and here's where you failed, and here's where I asked you, is everything okay? Because I was engaged. I was paying attention to what was happening. And you continued to, you know, miss this, miss that, blow this off. As a leader, if you're unfortunately in that position, which you will be, you've just allowed yourself the easiest conversation right before having to lay the wood to somebody. And in this case, it might mean letting them go, you know, because along the way, you're holding them accountable. You're kind of doing the performance improvement plan that everybody, all companies have.
Performance plan. Performance plan.
Yeah, the performance. Well, what you're saying, you know, my point to people is make your whole thing about performance improvement plans, right? Well, we have to formally counsel. Well, great. Your formal counseling is when you're scheduled to follow up with them on the process, on the progress of their thing. Document what happens. You're allowed to document your conversations. And if it's great, it's great. You have that for their performance appraisals later, which is good. And if it's bad, well, there it is. There's your first documentation. You know what I mean? It just takes care of itself. You know what I mean? It's not this big deal. And again, when it comes down to really having that hard conversation, you just get to stick with the facts. You know, and that makes it easy. That makes it, allows it to be unemotional. And, you know, at the end, usually it's everybody's kind of on the same page. Yeah. And maybe this isn't for me. So how about work related, right? All this stuff is great. Is it affecting the bottom line? Are projects going fast? You know, are they getting done faster? Are they getting done on time? Are they getting done more complete? What's the, you know, let's talk bottom line on this.
Yeah, yes, yes, and yes. I mean, my projects are going really, really well. A big thing I think about with my projects is velocity of building technology, you know, velocity in your technology projects. And this stuff has an effect on the velocity. I might typically think about like how fast are tickets getting done and scoping work, but this leadership like principles and being present in conversations and having accountability things, I mean, it all affects the bottom line of velocity. I would say now is the best SALT has been doing in 3 years, I would say. The projects are enjoyable. I think the team is having fun. We're getting a chance to work on bigger projects with other people from other teams. And so I have an opportunity to lead not only my core team, but other folks on other from other firms sort of on bigger projects. So everything's growing. And I think everyone's having fun.
And from what I understand, there's now potential, albeit incremental growth within SALT coming up.
Yes, hopefully. Hopefully we'll have a few more, well, at least one more person before too long. Yeah. And, I don't subscribe to the growth mindset. I don't want SALT to be doubling and tripling in size. I really like the small but highly effective team. So it's important to me to get these principles locked in for a very small team and then just have a lot of fun working on the projects we can handle and, almost enjoy like your Navy SEAL team of five or six people as opposed to trying to constantly double every, 6 months until you have 100 people.
Yeah, so it's fun, right? So those terms that people get afraid of, discipline, accountability, guidelines, procedure, people look at that like, oh God, a military guy wanting to impart this stuff. But in the end, you're the perfect example. Those things are what you're exhibiting right now. It takes discipline to do those things within each project, to have that, to pay all the attention to the things you would mention you're paying attention to. That's a form of discipline, okay, to do that. And what this is doing is just creating more time for you. It's creating a more fun work environment. So it's really weird that those terms that you initially heard and were like, oh my God, are like, wow, these are actually making things kind of fun, giving me a little more freedom, and this is okay.
Yeah, I mean, nobody is more against the sort of traditional command and control hierarchy than myself, right? Like that the military embodies. And not that it's wrong, but I just don't necessarily subscribe to it. And I think a lot of people in technology don't. And so, when we started, I wondered, is the solution to this a rigid command and control hierarchy where everybody is writing two things on note cards and passing it up their chain of command until I get a stack of note cards and know what's going on in my company? And it's been the opposite. It's not like that, which has been pretty shocking to me.
And that's awesome. We'll just finish up with that. It's the days of hierarchical, leadership where just do what I tell you to do, those are gone. You need to have all the things, the bedrocks that we're talking about that we just mentioned on this podcast specifically to you. Those are staples, but how you employ them is changing. Employing them within your personality, being comfortable with them, being consistent with them, and then empowering your people to do their work, get that upfront stuff done and let your people go, man. Let them express themselves. Just because I depend on this job for my pay doesn't mean I will ever let you talk to me that way. Oh, tell me, who do you think you are? Who the hell do you think you are?
This is the Leadership in Tech Podcast. If you want to know more about the show or the Tech OnRamp, go to www.techonramp.com. You can also find all of Season 1 and Season 2 so far, as well as our blog, our newsletter sign up, and more. This show is available on YouTube, iTunes, Google Play Music, SoundCloud, Player FM, Pocket Casts, and Stitcher. For more about the companies involved in making this possible, check out Salt.io at www.salt.io and Leader193 at www.leader193.com. Tune in next Thursday for the next episode of the Leadership in Tech podcast, presented to you by the Technology OnRamp.
Tell me what to do, and I'd gladly do my job, but I don't like your attitude. I don't like your attitude.